Monday through Friday, 1 a.m. till 4 a.m. Eastern Time. Bring your mind, bring your ideas, bring your voice. King Arthur had nothing on us. Here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. I want to thank everybody for listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com, the one place where information never sleeps. Revolution, Revolution Radio.
All right, let's show them what we got here.
Hello, all you good-looking people out there in Revolution Radio. This is Mario. I invite you to join me Thursdays at 6 o'clock for This, That, and the Other. It's a show about you, it's a show about me, but ultimately it's a show where we try to have a little bit of fun. We discuss important topics, and we do our best to be apolitical. So I invite you, put on your favorite pair of comfy sweats, your smoking jacket, and grab a beverage of your choice, and join me Thursday evenings at 6 o'clock. For This, That, and the Other on Revolution Radio.
Welcome home. Glad you could make it. This good earth, garden circles. Let's learn growing food and gardening together. We are all a part of this good earth, garden, circles.
Well, welcome home. Welcome to this good earth, garden, circles. We're one of many new hosts, which is rather cool. And about a year ago, we need the clan mothers. Yes, well, here they come. Anyway, we our show is This Good Earth Garden Circles. Let's learn together. And we're all a part of This Good Earth Garden Circles. And it makes our job easier because food is a part of this good earth garden circles, and people are a part of this good earth garden circles. Creation is a part of this good earth and earth garden circles. And our experience being creatures of creation is a part of this good earth garden circles. And we, to quote that cool Jewish dude, also known as the Good Shepherd, a long time ago, the thief comes to kill, steal, and destroy, but I have come that you might have gardens and more abundant gardens. Or I think he said something like that. It might have been something like that. But Trudge is away, not far away, but she'll be joining us in a moment. I can hear her in the distance. Let's see what we have here, though.
To walk on in with my own authority for Lord, Lord, I've been on the run this morning.
This good earth world.
It all has to
sound this. Bobby did it go.
I have been on a journey of husbandry. I went primarily to see at first hand conditions in the drought state. I shall never forget the fields of wheat, so blasted by heat that they cannot be harvested. I shall never forget field after field of corn, stunted, earless, stripped of leaves, for what the sun left, the grasshoppers took. No cracked earth, no blistering sun, no burning wind, no grasshoppers are a permanent match for the indomitable American farmers and stockmen and their wives and children who have carried on through desperate days and inspire us with their self-reliance, their tenacity, and their courage. It was their father's task to make homes. It is their task to keep these homes, and it is our task to help them win their fight.
Swell.
Hi, Trudge.
Good afternoon.
Glad you could make it.
Yes, I'm glad to be here.
We're in Northern California, just to let the listeners know. I sort of assume we have to repeat some information. We've been married 27 years. My name is William Dirt McLean, and I'm glad to be joined, connected, married, union. Those are all words for yoga, by the way. And we discuss jhana yoga and Vedanta philosophy on This Good Earth Garden Circles. As I was saying, we want healthy and abundant gardens and healthy and abundant people, especially our good Rev Radio listeners, you know. So, and we want them to have truth. And if there's people, there's a whole bunch of good people out there, as on previous shows, we went into Jeffrey Epstein, Ghislaine Maxwell, 1981 documentary called Boys for Sale from Houston, Texas.
Yes.
And then we went into Garber Mate and B.K. Shivananda, and who might I learned from, I want to call him master almost, you know, but I've learned that he would want us to experience life and live your own life, not his life. So,
yeah.
So in Vedanta or Jhana Yoga, we say Namaste, or I honor the God within you. Or Om Shanti, it's a greeting, or both of those. Namaste is like a greeting. I greet the God within you, and I respect and honor the God within you. And Om Shanti, boy, it seems like I was talking tongues. My tongues got twisted in there a little bit. That's for another show, though. A man and of angels, it says. But anyway, that's called the love chapter in the Bible. That's chapter 1 Corinthians chapter 13. And when we went to renew our vows at a small church that was still meeting, you know, still gathering, mm-hmm. peacefully assembling, and we called the ashram down in Percy. They did not have a swami or a teacher or a priest available for renewal of marriage vows. Mm-hmm. They would have been happy to do it. They just and they have over 100 center. This is the Chin Maya mission. And they have over 100 centers, at least 10 years, 15 years ago, they had over 100 and growing. So
yeah,
it's more than that in different cities. I grew up in Houston, Texas. Houston Chin Maya Nanda or Chin Maya Mission Center, the Vedanta Center is called. It's called the Vedanta Center, the Houston Vedanta Center. If you go to the website, it will tell you the history of all the different places. It says that it was established in 1978. Well, that's interesting because I had said I was going to Memorial High School in West Houston, with, as I talked about in previous shows, what that was like and the different cliques that people tended to migrate to, whether it was the jocks or the preppies, you know, the rich snobs, I guess we'd call them, or the misfit hippies. And we would be, both of you and I grew up, we sort of, the clique that we migrated to was sort of the misfit hippies. We had older siblings that were sort of hippie-ish, and yeah, we were sort of the second line or whatever, yeah, the next line down from as we started off with that. That was in 1969. By the way, that was a 1969. Let's see just a little bit more since we're talking hippie things. But so where was I going with this? We were in the middle. You just joined us. We were in the middle of a program talking about soil. But first, let's hear a little bit more of this. This was recorded 10/28/1969. And it's Jack Cassidy and Jorma. And just, you know, it's just the three of them jamming. And Jerry, yes. And we happen to be, I certainly am hot tuna, you know, I sort of like Jorma or Horma, you know, yeah, as a person and sort of, there's certain people that, oh, that reminds me, we're going to talk every show, the mystery of double digging, and we're going to bring up the four absolutes, like absolute love, purity, honesty, you know, and there's four questions that go along with them. We read them, didn't we, Fred?
Yes.
And they're called four absolutes. They're like plowing a field and looking at the end of that row. You're not there yet, but you keep moving towards it and keep trying to get there.
Yes.
And you don't look back like Lot's wife did. Mm-hmm. And she turned to a pillar of salt. But, as Jake and Elwa did, we're on a mission from God. They didn't look back.
Yeah.
Carrie Fisher was out, Jake's ex-girlfriend, you know, out to... you know, with that bazooka trying to hit them. And they just kept going. They dusted themselves. So they were in a pile of bricks. They dusted themselves off and they said, let's go. So that's sort of the attitude that we try to carry in life. But I was in the middle of a documentary or some while you were out. a documentary about soil in the Dust Bowl. But before we get into that, and we're also going to talk about Atman. That's God. But that's a little later in the show, but we'll get to that. Here's this concert, though. We'll see how it goes. Yes. 1969. This was some, and they didn't go to CIA guitar school in Laurel Canyon. Sorry, little brother. That's what I call our good friend down in Santa Cruz, who we've discussed gardening with and everything. In fact, I would like Jimmy Jean to go visit the Santa Cruz, UC Santa Cruz Gardens. Mm-hmm. And maybe we can have him just as a guest. Hey, Jimmy, would you go down and check out the organic gardens at UC Santa Cruz and just give us a report? But anyway, they didn't go to CIA music school. In fact, they on purpose, they might have known about the company. That's what they call the spooks, you know, or whatever. The U.S. Blues, they said, yes, that would only add controversy. He's hiding out. Where's Uncle Sam? Hiding out in a rock and roll band. Well, he's still around. His pulse stays the same. 72, come rain or shine. But they didn't go to CIA. That's just, as hosts on Revolution Radio, we can disagree agreeably. We can have difference of opinion.
Yes.
We have free speech here. That means we have a right to speak our opinion and to have our opinion and to have our own mind. And we don't want government intrusion into our personal business, our personal effects, or into our brain.
Yes.
And one thing that Jimmy Jean has quite brought up is this thing called social engineering. Mm-hmm. Also, Scorpio and Giuseppe. And what a blessing. Talk about synchronicities and people at the right time coming to Revolution Radio. Something's happening. Something's happening here. What it is ain't clear, yes, but something's happening at Rev Radio. Mm-hmm. We're getting the clan mothers that we needed, teaching about spirituality. Mm-hmm. We have several new shows. I can go to the, I don't know if they're on the schedule, and I would have to hit refresh. I have the Rev Radio page up, but I haven't refreshed it in. It's been up for several weeks now and not refreshed. So, and then I would have to search down. But we have Meow and Mitzi and Eagle Flower and just several other great new shows coming up. Just starting. And we're so happy because it makes our job easier. Yeah. What they're talking about is healthy lives, healthy babies, healthy children, healthy living.
Yeah.
And that's all a part of this Good Earth Garden Circles.
Yeah.
So that's the cool thing about Revolution Radio. But y'all just put it on the books. I disagree that they went to the company school I'm talking CIA, Laurel Kent. I call it the company school. Okay. That's a little inside joke that some people might see, but they never became commercial. If they were CIA promoted, they went down in numbers, not up in numbers. I kept following them. Growing up in Houston, we got to go see the last concert, the 50th reunion of the Grateful Dead, down in San Francisco at Levi Stadium, didn't we?
Yes, we did. It was a nice show.
It was. And we got some Grateful Dead artwork. And it's framed, isn't it, Lynn?
Yes, it is.
Read the date on it. There are tickets in there. Can you see the date?
No, I can't.
I see the price is $199.50, and seat 37. Part of it is covered up by the Sunday, June 28th, 2015. And we went down to Levi's Stadium for the Fare Thee Well concert.
Yes.
And the way that happened was I grew up in Houston, Texas. Mm-hmm. In 1975, I got to see Jerry Garcia at Liberty Hall. My older brother had a friend named Ron. And Ron found out that we had moved to Northern California. My older brother, David, lives in Seattle. This is from high school. I used to go out and hang out with I had gotten into my brother's tackle box where he would split up a pound of weed. And, you know, I smoked a, grabbed a joint or two, you know, little Billy, you know, well, I wonder what this is, you know, 10 years old and great, smoking grapevine, as well as playing out in the woods and nature and learning.
Yeah.
There was a book that I read called Viruses. And it was about electron microscopy, DNA, RNA, viruses, how viruses are inert until they have to interact with a cell. We're going to cellular biology. I started out as a biology major. Then I got an AA degree from Monterey Peninsula College, 1982. My brother-in-law was John Jevons at that time. Mm-hmm. And I got to see Ecology Action in Palo Alto in their home in Palo Alto with their backyard mini farm.
Yeah.
And how I just, we discussed this in the last show, the outside of their, the perimeter of their backyard had the fruit trees and maybe vines that grew up. And then in the center was the 5x20 garden beds. On previous show, we said they're 5 feet wide, and then 18 to 32-inch paths. I like, you know, I like wider paths,
yeah,
because some plants grow out into the path. Yes, path. So, but if some people don't take them down to 18. I like a path about 2.5 feet wide.
Yeah.
And then your bed is 5 feet wide. And Trudge, why do we make the garden bed? If it was wider, what would happen? Or if it was narrower?
Wouldn't be able to reach into it to weed. And
so why do we keep it? Why do we keep it 5 feet wide? Exactly what you said.
Yeah, because of reaching in and weeding and planting and
even you or somebody can reach in. No, yes. There's some variation for children. They might make their garden bed 4 feet wide so they can reach in easier and from one side or the other to weed and to plant.
Yeah,
because rule number one is, never step in the garden.
Yeah.
And you say, well, how do you do that? Well, that's another reason why you have 5 foot wide garden beds with paths, you know, 2 foot paths in between.
Mm-hmm.
The garden beds are very broken up, fluffy, friable soil, and your paths are the compacted soil that you walk on. Yes. In between the garden beds are the paths, obviously. And, let me see if Jerry's still jamming. If you listen really well, you can still hear, he played the banjo. I've heard an album from 1963 with just him and his wife, Sarah. But here, let's see if Jerry is still. They needed guitar players up or banjo players up in heaven too, I guess.
Are we in 2-2-7?
Do you know anyone else that takes longer between songs? Yes. They weren't taught by the company, I don't think. The company. Laura Kim.
And inspire us with their self-reliance, their tenacity, and their courage. It was their father's task to make homes. It is their task to keep these homes. And it is our task to help them win their fight.
Soil health is very important, not only for farmers, but for the consumer and the general public, because we all like to eat, and I don't think any of us are going to volunteer to give that up anytime soon. There's just example after example of civilizations that their decline has been in large part because they've ruined their soils. They've lived.
Okay. Do I hear crickets? Do I hear frogs? Let's see what we're doing here.
Keep these homes, and it is our task to help them win their fight.
Soil health is very important, not only for farmers, but for the consumer and the general public, because we all like to eat. And I don't think any of us are going to volunteer to give that up anytime soon. There's just example after example of civilizations that their decline has been in large part because they've ruined their soils. They've let their soils erode. The productivity of their country has washed away into the rivers, and then they're no longer able to feed themselves. And so from a social standpoint, soil health is incredibly important in order just to sustain our ability to feed not only ourselves, but to feed the world. That's why it's really important for the continued productivity of this country, not only for our generation, but for future generations. That importance then kind of leans over into what is the public perception. And I would say right now, the public doesn't really have a good understanding of soil health. And I can say that because I don't think a lot of farmers have a really good understanding of soil health. Regardless of whether you're organic or conventional or no-till or anything in between, it all has to start with the soil. Even farmers that went to college and took a soil science class, that's mainly all dealing with the physical and chemical properties of the soil. Hardly ever talked about the biological component. And that's what is really missing from a proper understanding of soil health, is how important the biology is.
This is Living Soil, the film.
The soil is a living organism. If you think about a really healthy soil, there's about 10,000 pounds of biological material below that soil surface, everything from fungi to bacteria, earthworms, everything else in between. And you total them all up, that 10,000 pounds is about the same as two African elephants. If you imagine two elephants, it takes a lot to feed them. So if you have that much biological activity below the soil surface, it's going to take a lot to feed those as well. From now until 2060, we're going to have to produce as much food as we've produced in the last 500 years. What we eat, other than what comes out of the oceans, is all derived from soil. Soil security is equal to food security. So if we want to make sure that we can feed the world's population, we're going to have to understand how we make sure that our soil has the capability of producing these crops.
I'm Keith Burns, the president and co-owner of Green Cover Seed here in Blade, Nebraska. I co-own it along with my brother Brian. We've been farming here all of our lives, and this land we intend to be able to hand down to our children and grandchildren. And so soil health has always been something that's, I guess, been important to us. But probably only since about 2008 have we really, you know, consciously been making efforts to really drastically improve it. The atmosphere around us is 78% nitrogen, but it's unavailable to plants. So this legume plant can't actually take nitrogen out of the atmosphere and utilize it. But what it can do is it can host a very specific type of bacteria on its roots. That's actually colonies of rhizobia bacteria that are able to take the atmospheric nitrogen, convert it into forms of nitrogen that a plant can use, and they basically will then sell it or trade it to this plant in exchange for carbon. Plants, through photosynthesis, produce the carbon. So what we see going on here is a very complex economy going on within the soil, where plants are using carbon as a currency to purchase goods and services from the bacteria, from the fungus in the soil, really from all of the biology. But in this case, they're purchasing nitrogen from these bacteria in exchange for the carbon. And that's the whole key to the soil health system. It's really all about the carbon. So carbonomics is a term that hopefully will get people thinking in an economic frame of mind, but using carbon as the currency. And if
we could get farmers to think in terms of carbon, or at least understand that carbon is even more important than nitrogen, then the only way to get carbon into the soil is to have a growing plant. You got to have photosynthesis. If I want more carbon, I have to have plants growing more often. So I can't just have corn and soybeans growing from May through September. I've got to have a cover crop growing from October through April. And that's where I get the big extra boost of carbon into my system.
I've seen great soil health in both organic and conventional settings. I've seen terrible soil health in both conventional and organic settings. Really, it comes down to the management practices and how the farmer is going to integrate the principles of soil health into their operation.
Cover crops are simply crops planted between your cash crops that aren't really planted to be harvested necessarily. They're just there to try to put carbon back in the soil, to utilize sunlight during times of year that our cash crops are not, to protect the soil.
The sudden loss of her father's
living cover to shield the soil from erosion. Soil is a living, breathing system. Sometimes we have to feed it a little for it to feed us. And it's like a relationship. If you're in a relationship where all you do is take, and you take the maximum you can at every opportunity, what are the odds of that relationship lasting very long?
I'm very, very cautious and conscientious about working the soil, not working it too much, trying to put as much organic matter back into the soils through cover cropping as I can. My philosophy is that if I take care of the soils are going to take care of the vegetables. So I do a lot of cover cropping on the farm, on bare ground. If at all possible, I have cover crops on it. I do a lot of cover cropping interplanting with crops to like bring in beneficial insects. I use a lot of mulch, like as you can see, all the straw that's in between the beds. There's a lot of different components that are involved in creating and maintaining healthy soils. From out here. Are you done?
I got one left. Next is bok choy.
And we're going to do the bok choy next. And it's out in field E.
Lettuce. Massive heads of lettuce under there. Up. And here we go.
Holy moly. They're so gorgeous.
Holy moly.
Oh my gosh. The heads that you would see at the grocery store are half this size. We're going to harvest a lot of them. This is my 7th year of farming. I had a ton to learn. I mean, I didn't know anything about farming and raising produce and soil health. And I still feel like I still do have a ton to learn. The CSA model of farming is why I started farming, and it's what made me passionate about farming. It stands for communities.
Community-supported agriculture. On this Good Earth Garden Circles, we're going to be covering things like farmers markets, like our local Eureka Natural Foods, in organic mini farming and CSAs. She's talking about CSAs. That's community supported agriculture. You have people sign up, maybe 20 customers, and as you're growing, they get to know you. They get to see how you grow, and they come on Saturday and they pick up a box of vegetables. Or what's you're growing on your CSA, community supported agriculture.
Supported agriculture. Hiya. How are you?
I'm good.
Good. So I have members that pay up at the beginning of the year. They pay an upfront fee in exchange for their income to support the farm. My guarantee is that for 24 weeks, the spring, summer, and fall season, that I will provide 7 to 9 different items in their CSA share that they get every week.
We always try and
people are starting to care about and think about where their food is coming from and care about the connection between the person that's growing the food and the food that they're eating.
Eucalyptus.
I look at it as a responsibility for me to try to educate my CSA members.
Rudbeckia.
You have to start with the big picture before you get into the minutiae of soil health. You can't start with why it is that I plant cover crops and the goals that I'm trying to get out of cover cropping. I have to start with this gorgeously beautiful Swiss chard that I bring to the farmer's market. And they look at it and go, oh my God, how did you do that? I know that cover cropping is helping to benefit the soils, but it's not something that you're going to see in a year or two. Building soil is not something that happens quickly. It takes a long time. I mean, when you think about when the glaciers came down, like hundreds and hundreds of years ago, that's why we have the soils that we have.
Cover cropping. In the wintertime, we do cover cropping. And then it's a mixture of like 7 or 8 different seeds. We buy it at a local feed store, and it has legumes in it, which are nitrogen fixers. It has winter rye, which produces a lot of carbon. And it's a mix of, I think, seven or eight different seeds. And you plant it in the garden beds, in our winter garden beds. We'll be growing mustard greens and other winter crops, collard greens, mustard greens in a couple garden beds. And then of our 100 square foot garden beds, and we hope to add some more square footage, but right now that's what we're doing. We sold our 18-acre blueberry farm in Mississippi in 2014 to move here to Northern California. And what you do with your cover crops is before they actually go to seed, you dig them back in. That's called green manure. And you dig them back in the spring, and then you have your starts hopefully started in seed flats. And when you dig your green manure in and let it sit for a week or two, and then you add some compost and other stuff and soil amendments and mostly compost. The first year we were here, as she said, it takes time to build up soil.
Yeah.
We got 2 cubic yards of right from our local Van Dusen Valley Dairy 2 year of age manure. I think it was 2 or 3 years old actually, and it was 2 yards. That initially helped boost our garden up, add organic matter to it, so it maintains the right texture and maintains more moisture and makes a good environment for living organism. As this little documentary is called, Living Soil.
Mm-hmm. We're a certified organic vegetable farm. The whole farm is certified, but I'm growing vegetables on about 7 acres. If you have a lot of land, you can take an entire field out of vegetable production and just have it in a cover crop or a couple of cover crops for the year, and then next year plant it in vegetables. I don't have that much land. So for me, it's really tricky moving things around. So I do a lot of intercropping. One of the most common intercropping things that I do is with a fall brassica crop, I put buckwheat in the pathways. And buckwheat, when it flowers, brings in a parasitic wasp, and that wasp feeds on aphids. And aphids are about the biggest pest on fall brassica crops. I'm doing a lot of IPM pest control on the cash crop that I'm growing just by planting this buckwheat that's kind of in between the pathways.
Oregon.
My dad started with 5 acres.
and we built from there. He built up to 60 acres when he was alive, and then I built it up to 120 since he passed away. He's a great farmer for his time.
A beautiful his farm.
Time, the field didn't come out from the canneries. He'd say, you need to spray this, you need to spray this on this time. Even if there was bugs present, you know, harmful bugs present or not, you had to do it. That's totally changed now. There are field agents out there now with corporations that really understand that there are other methods of controlling the bad bugs, using good bugs, et cetera. And so I think that's been a really major shift over the past, I'd say, 20 years, which is really beneficial to the consumer. That message, in my opinion, has got to come from the farmers right to the general public. And that's what we try to do at our farm stands is inform them of how we do things and why we do it. And to let them know that, that the food that we provide for them is very, very safe.
How's it going?
Good. How are you?
Hey. I got broccoli. See? See what I'm saying? He's asking for broccoli.
I got
some already. A part of the job of a farmer that sells directly to the public is changing public perception or correcting public perception as to what farmers really do. By and large, most of farmers understand that soil health is critical to their business. The saying that I like to use is, I'm not really treating the plant, I'm treating the soil. If you treat the soil right and take care of the soil, your crops will come.
Healthy soil.
Our model is
plant.
40 different crops. We're always rotating crops around, and like I only like to put crops in one patch of soil for 3 years, and then I automatically rotate it out, whether it's berries, vegetables, or whatever. We plant different varieties of cover crops depending on what's going to be the succeeding crop coming up. For instance, we raise a lot of corn, and it takes a lot of nitrogen. So in fields that are going to be going into corn, the preceding year, then we go ahead and plant an Austrian pea in there, which will fix its own nitrogen. So we have a strong, good nitrogen source in the soil prior to planting and seeding the corn crop. And we can really reduce the use of synthetic fertilizers and also just makes the soil much healthier. Very expensive seed costs. But now when you take it the full length of the year and look at the fact that Austrian pea is actually adding 40 to 50 pounds of nitrogen, then you got to figure out, well, what's that saving me in fertilizer costs? Well, corn takes about 120 pounds per acre of nitrogen to really get it to full production and a full crop. So I'm cutting my fertilizer bank in half. So I'm only using half the amount of fertilizer that I normally need to use. Then suddenly Austrian pea isn't so expensive. There's a value in that, but there's another value in that is less time for me in the field making sure fertilizer is being applied at the appropriate time because it's just there already. And then in other parts of soil that like came out of corn or came out of berries where there's excess nitrogen already in the soil, we'll plant more of a cereal rye variety cover crop because that's a really good absorbing and holding nitrogen in the plant during the winter time. And then we can plow that under in the springtime before planting other crops. I keep my farm stand open pretty much year round and keep feeding different crops into that. And then that builds my customer base and more people come by. I think we need large corporate farms to feed America, but I think we feed society with farms like mine.
So $5.50. All right, there you go.
A farm is a business, so yield matters and productivity matters. And I fully believe, and sitting up here today, because I believe that soil health is crucial to productivity, short and long term.
I think there's a deeply engaged set of consumers that is growing. It's a consumer base that's growing. And I think what they're trying to tell us as a big food company is that food isn't a zero-sum game. As I think about what I heard today, I was blown away by the amount of science. And I know that the science has been there and the research is good, but I was really impressed. And then came this talk of...
Well, we're coming up to the top of the hour break. Revolution Radio has two studios. We keep the hallway clean. We sweep and pick up the trash in the hallway. And when we go out to the back alley to smoke cigarettes or smoke some of that good Humboldt. By the way, what goes with really good Humboldt County cannabis?
Food?
Food. good organic food. They kind of go together. Yeah. So we're up here in the northern, and it's interesting. Now cannabis has gone legal in so many states. I hope that we see get away from synthetic fibers and more to hemp fibers, as well as we call hemp medicine. And I snuck into my brother's stash. He was split up pounds, and this is 1973 or 72, 70. I was young, so early 70s, and I was saying how we went to the Fare Thee Well concert. David had a friend named Ron who now lives in Boston, and he sent tickets. He found out that we moved here in 2014 to Northern California, sold our farm in Mississippi, our 18-acre blueberry farm, and he sent tickets. I grew up in Houston, knew Ron from high school, used to go over there and listen to reel-to-reel bootleg tapes of Jerry and the band, and he would play along, and we'd try to catch the mistakes that, you know, Jerry would miss a note, which wasn't very, you know, I mean, yeah. We're all, as we said on the previous show, we need to understand we're all fallible human beings, but we try to learn from our mistakes, and life is a learning experience, and there's always room for improvement. And in talking about that, I mentioned, so that how we went to the several years back, the Fare Thee Well 50th Grateful Dead concert was an old high school friend who had moved to Boston sent two tickets to my brother in Seattle, who sent two tickets down here to Northern California so that we could go down and see them play their Fare Thee Well show. And the acid they had was called pyramid acid. They had, for the Chicago shows, they had the blue acid, and for the San Francisco, it was little green pyramids. Anyway, it was real mellow acid. It made you feel like you were in a bubble or something, like there was a bubble surrounding you. But the four absolutes, I said I was going to go over this. And this is like plowing a field, you know, with a animal or whatever. You look at it to the end of the row, and the four absolutes, there's four absolutes and four questions that go along with each one. The four absolutes are honesty, unselfishness, purity, and love. And there's a question that goes along with each of these. And these are kind of like, if your life is like for a metaphor, a ship, an old ship, you know, let's think about the trading, you know, the 2,000 years ago, the trade routes and stuff. And they would have to navigate by the stars and the sun and, these help you navigate your life and keep the four absolutes are like the stars and the other things that they were using to keep on course. Yes. So honesty, I'll read each one along with a question. Honesty, is it true or is it false? Unselfishness, how will this affect the other fellow? Purity, is it right or is it wrong? Love, is it ugly or is it beautiful? And Rev Radio is a beautiful thing. So Rev Radio rocks and love rules.
Yes.
And we want to keep Rev Radio a beautiful thing. And we want to be beautiful people. And we want to have beautiful gardens. It's all a part of this good art garden circles. So we played a little bit of, let me see, we just have a few minutes. Let me put on a short thing about Ghislaine Maxwell.
Going in. Of 2,000 pages in Miss Maxwell's case is not only explosive and salacious, it's also very damaging to her criminal case. One of the biggest bombshells is that Miss Maxwell was allegedly scouting Paris Hilton in the early 2000s, believing that she was the perfect partner for Jeffrey Epstein.
Paris would have only been 19 at the time. That explosive claim was made by journalist Christopher Mason, a former close friend of Maxwell, in the new Lifetime documentary, Surviving Jeffrey Epstein.
A friend of mine was at a party, and Ghislaine said, "Oh my God, who's that?" And was looking at this pretty young sort of teenage girl. And she said, "Do you know her?" My friend said, "Yeah, she's called Paris Hilton." And Ghislaine said, "Oh, God, she'd be perfect for Jeffrey. Could you introduce us?"
The documents also revealed this troubling claim about Prince Andrew.
We also learned, and it's one of the more bizarre things that we've learned, is that allegedly Prince Andrew was given finger puppets by...
See ya. Yes, sir.
Travels to Earth through the rainbow crystal bubbles from the furthest reaches of space and time, across the dimensions, through the elements, and in harmony with the colors of the universe. Through her mastery of abstract stream of consciousness malapropisms, she weaves a web of comic, satiric, cosmic conversation. Her subjects can range from Norman, the goose next door, to astrology and earth changes, and into the deep recesses of the soul matrix. She holds a wealth of knowledge on herbs, plants, and astrology. Join Mona and her guests on Adventures of a Feral Hippie as she touches the earthly radio waves 5 days a week at 2 p.m. Monday to Friday on Studio B at Revolution Radio.
Hello, my name is Mr. Rowe. I am the host of Reality Extraction on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. I utilize logic, intellect, and magic to methodically autonomize, vivisect, analyze, examine, study, scrutinize, and extract an essence of reality from a fog of illusion and confusion. You can find me on Studio B every Thursday at 1700 hours Pacific Time. That's 8 p.m. Eastern. No topic taboo, no subject too strange. I strive to take a neutral standpoint during the dissection of the topic at hand. That's Reality Extraction with Mr. Rowe on Revolution Radio.
If you think for one second that the Capitol will ever treat us fairly, you are lying to yourselves. Because we know who they are and what they do. This is what they do, and we must fight back. You can torture us, you can bomb us, fire is catching. And if we burn, you burn with us.
Good evening.
Are you awake yet? I hope.
We've tried and we've tried for years and years to use passive resistance and loud voices to make a change. But time is over. Your governments around the world have no other goal than to decimate your entire existence at the hands of the bankers and the elites. The war is coming, and it's your choice to decide if you want to be a warrior or a victim. Denial is not a choice anymore. Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener supported radio station on the planet, not giving up. Revolution Radio.
Welcome home. Glad you could make it. This good earth, garden circles. Let's learn growing food and gardening together. We are all a part of this good earth, garden circles.
What's big Gillette? Victim Jeffrey Epstein was arrested and the world finally found out how to pronounce her stupid fucking name. I always thought it was Ghislaine, which doesn't sound like a British socialite. It sounds like what's inside a rap groupie's stomach. Maxwell was accused of recruiting, grooming, trafficking, and abusing cabinets full of underage girls, not as a producer of Miramax, but as Epstein's right hand in their child sex ring. Congrats, feminists. Female pedophile kingpins are finally getting the attention they deserve. The patriarchy has been crushed like Epstein's windpipe. Their human trafficking operation was over 20 years old, or as Epstein would say, ugh. They were enabled by a powerful network of politicians, billionaires, celebrities, and Kevin Spacey, which is weird because he's not even into girls. I guess he's just that into rape. So all this begs the question, why did the arrest take so long, and where the fuck was this guy? Now, some say they were able to fly under the radar because they had powerful friends, like former president and sex god, Bill Clinton, who rode on Epstein's plane 27 times. Now, I'm not saying he knew anything about underage girls, but 27 times? You didn't see a retainer lying around? It didn't make you nervous that Epstein passed out iPads to keep the girls quiet? You weren't curious. When he put his oxygen mask on before assisting the girls around him, it wasn't peculiar that they didn't call it first class, they called it homeroom. None of that, Bill. Their network didn't just include past presidents, but the current one too. Old Donald used to party with Epstein back in the day before banning him from Mar-a-Lago for hitting on an underage girl. Trump said their friendship fell apart not over Chuck E. Cheese sex parties, but rather a real estate bidding war. In typical Epstein fashion, he refused to go to a higher number and lost out on his development wet dreams. It wasn't just presidents. Maxwell and Epstein were connected to royalty too. They were close personal friends with human penguin Prince Andrew. The prince loved everything about Epstein, especially the teen. On 5 occasions, he visited Jeffrey's estate in the Virgin Islands. Virgin?
Yeah, especially.
I'm not even going to make that joke. That's too childish. Like their girlfriends, they would go on shooting holidays together. What kind of shooting? Skeet? In 2010, the Duke of York was so disgusted by the news that his longtime pal was a pedo that he decided to fly to New York and party with him for 4 days. He even stayed at the Diddler's townhouse. Why did he stay there?
But you were staying at the house of a convicted sex offender.
It was a convenient place to stay.
Yeah, convenient if you want to have sex with children, you Scooby-Doo villain-looking motherfucker. And you would have gotten away with it if it wasn't for those meddling kids. Presidents, royalty, but don't leave out the billionaires. I mean, if you're trying to run an international pedophile ring, you need money from countless secret sources, right? Nope. One guy, billionaire business boy and Epstein's sole client, Les Wexner. He owns Victoria's Secret. The Secret, she's 13. I mean, look at this fucking scumbag. He looks like Spock's grandfather. Ears like that. And you didn't hear any rumors at all? Wexner isn't the only one. Bill Gates met with Epstein after he was a registered sex offender. Billionaire, 100 times over Bill Gates, had a great reason. He needed money. Bill was fundraising for his charity. Hey, Bill, the funds have been raised. Remember that thing, Windows? Did you call it that because that's what you guys were peeping into? Anyway, hey, not now, Clippy. Wait, what? But who knows? They probably have a lot in common. Bill wants to inject $40,000.
I have been a long time girl.
Rockefeller. Yes, he did. Well, what are we supposed to do? How can we have healthy and healed gardens and lives? And apply good gardening principles and good principles in life. We talked about the four absolutes. They can keep our ship on course, our life on course. But just little things. What is Atman? What is God? So we have that question. We already said, we already answered, who is Ghislaine? Who is Ghislaine Maxwell? We already sort of asked that one, didn't we? Now we're asking, who is Atman? And Atman would be the source of healing, the source of overcoming. Like Ganesh, with small eyes, that are show wisdom and are farsighted, large ears that can listen, a small mouth that doesn't speak much. It's a metaphor for what we need. Ganesh was actually a little baby. They cut the head off the baby. Does that sound terrible? Well, that's like cutting the ego off of you. But, very fascinating, Ganesh, in the metaphor and the meaning behind Ganesh. That's the elephant god in Hinduism. And as I said, I was taught, mentored in Vedanta philosophy in Houston when I was 14, 15 years old, and had my Vedic astrology chart done using very old texts. But let's see if we can find Atman. Does that sound like a good plan? I say it is. And let's all make it to the Rainbow Gathering and Rainbow Family Gathering in Idaho, All Rev Radio, next July, this in 2021. Sounds like a plan.
One Marwadi was going from Delhi to Madras to purchase something. And when they don't believe in banks and all that, they always carry ready cash.
This is who my mentor was. This is who I consider my spiritual mentor in a way, you know, as well as the good shepherd, you know. I mean, I try to follow when he says, take up your cross daily. The prayer of St. Francis, you read it twice, didn't you, Trudge?
Yes.
Yeah, on two previous shows. So, this is Chinmayananda, who set up Vedanta centers in over 100 cities, including the one in Houston. And I read handwritten manuscripts teaching Vedanta philosophy. It had it written, a verse written in Sanskrit and then in English, and they were handwritten. So he's talking about, there's two guys, somebody who knows God and somebody who doesn't know God and has a moral crisis in his life, a thief. And the godly man is going to Madras on the train to make a purchase of something. So, and he uses this story to teach us about Atman, A-T-M-A-N, Atman. Ro might say, it's that green light, you know, in your heart chakra. It could be one and the same, perhaps. I like that word, perhaps.
Something. And when they don't believe in banks and all that, they always carry ready cash. Because banks, are even now in India, is not very popular. So ready cash in a belt, he has got it on him. And he goes,
A smart con man had found out that he has got cash in his mind, and therefore he also came suited, booted, coated. And he also had reserved a seat in the same compartment, first class. So this Sethji, when he met this man, he asked him, he is only in dhoti, a shirt on. He asked him, you are going to? I'm going to Madras. Oh, you are going for business. Oh, you are doing business, dealing in business in textile. Oh, I see. So then the Sethji asked a few technical and very precise questions about textile industry and the market now. And this fellow doesn't know anything about it. He answered wrongly. But the Sethji never showed him. Oh, I see. So he understood that this fellow is not a textile man, but he must be coming with me because he knows that I have got cash. In the platform, it's two nights there to travel in the train. Evening came, night came, food was ordered and the restaurant people brought it and both of them ate, and then afterwards he went to the bathroom, got ready for the sleep and came back and laid down. So this man also went to the bathroom and then changed his clothes and the night dress and all that he has put in. He came back and he also laid down. In that night, this fellow will not sleep because he has come for a purpose. Sethji, fearlessly sleeping, snoring away. He searched the whole room. Every square inch he searched. He can't find the money. Hey, where did he keep it? He has no box and things like that. But he must be somewhere. He searched. And at about 3 a.m. he went to sleep. Exactly at 5:30, Sethji got up. Krishna, 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 loudly crying, and went to the bathroom. Very noisy in the bathroom. And then came back and lay down. This fellow had to get up. He got up. He also went to the bathroom and came back. When he was coming out of the bathroom, what does he see? His eyes came out. Why? Sethji was counting. Counted, and then he put it in his inner pocket. Said, oh, it is in this room. Okay. He was ready for the night. And in the night again, as usual, Sethji, after dinner and all that, Sethji went to the bathroom, came back. This man went to the bathroom, came back. By the time he came back, Sethji was already sleeping like an innocent baby. And the fellow started searching. Searched everywhere. He could not get it. Every square inch of that room. With a trained hand, he searched. No, he could not. He slept. Early morning, 5 o'clock, Sethji got up. Krishna, Krishna, Krishna.
Krishna, Krishna, Krishna.
Came out. And this man also got up. What to do? No, he is not allowing me to sleep also. He got up. He also went disgusted, dejected, despondent, angry with God, that God is with the Satan, not with me. Went to the bathroom. And when he came out, Sethji was counting and he is satisfied. By about 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock in the morning, the train reached Madras. Sethji got down first. And Sethji knew it probably. He stood there. He did not go out. This man came out, looked around, went to the Sethji and says, like a father to the son, I am coming as a son of yours.
This con man and the saint, they were on a train to Madras. The con man, the thief, while he was sleeping or going to the bathroom to, you know, morning wash his face, and yeah. Yes, and the con man or the thief, he was mad at God because how come God is with him and not with me? And he was disappointed he couldn't steal the money. He searched and he searched for it. He was trying to steal the as Chinmayananda says, the saint or godly man. Mm-hmm. So they're getting off the train in Madras, and the thief comes up to the saintly man and says, what was your secret? How did you keep me from finding the money that you had? I was trying to, and he was, and really the question is, how do you find Atman or God? Mm-hmm. That's the real question. And questions and answers are connected. We'll speak more of that. We have a Krishnamurti video that he speaks of questioning and ask and it shall be given, seek and ye shall find, knock and the door shall be opened to you. Somebody said that, mm-hmm. said that wise thing. So they're getting off the train in Madras. And the thief comes up to the godly man.
Please advise me. Where did you keep it? Advise me. I am surrendering to you as a guru. You have got a tremendous knowledge which I have not got it. Where did you keep it so safely? He said, my grandfather used to tell me that the best place to keep when you are got suspicious of anybody, he will never search that place. I kept it under your pillow.
He kept the money under the thief's pillow. He has quite the Indian accent. Yeah. I easily understand him because mm-hmm. I'm used to hearing him speak, but he kept the money under the thief's pillow.
Yeah.
And if the money is a metaphor for God, you can see how what he's trying to say by telling this story.
The young fellow with all devotion surrendered and proper used to tell me that the best place to keep when you are got suspicious of anybody, he will never search that place. I kept it under your pillow. The young fellow, with all devotion, surrendered and prostrated to the old man and said, sir, thank you for this tip. Nobody will think that your money is under my pillow. I will search all over the place, but not under my pillow. In the same way, this Atman, the self, is kept in you. That all of our equipments are extrovert. Eyes, ears, nose, tongue, skin, mind, intellect, all are functioning outward. And nobody detects this. Therefore, it is the secret of all secrets. I have already told you, vimrsyeda dasheshena, may you think over it exhaustively. I don't want you to believe, thou shalt believe, or else thou shalt to hell go. No, you think over it. I have given you all the rationale for it, all the line of thinking for it, and this is the secret of all secrets. Now think over it. Until it rings a bell in you, your understanding is necessary. It cannot be forced from outside. It is not a faith that you can force upon somebody. It is not conversion. Conversion on fear can take place, but that will not bring about the spirit unfoldment. You must yourself come to know about it. Vimarsyete asheshena. Yadhechasi tadha kuru. Thereafter, it is your decision. How, what you desire, you do it. Supposing after thinking about it, you came to the conclusion that the whole thing is a bluff, leave it. By you living Vedanta or spiritual life, the spirituality is not destroyed. If you say, no, it is a good thing, then you start working in it, you will be benefited. You do as you like. Give the complete freedom. My job is to give you this information, encourage you to think for yourself and come to your decision. And having decided that it is not worthwhile, leave it. If you think that it is worthwhile, pursue it. You decide for yourself. Ethichasi tatha kuru. As you desire thereafter, it is your wish, your will. Not because I said it that you must live. It must be your own conviction. Then only you will get yourself involved in it by yourself totally. It is a subjective search. Your total involvement is necessary. It cannot be thrust upon you from outside. Yadhechasi tatha kuru.
Bruce McDonald. He has a program, McDonald in the Morning. There's synchronicity happening at Rev Radio. We're going to explore synchronicity with Mona and some other people. What synchronicity is and how it connects to Atman. So God, Atman means God consciousness.
Yes.
Or nirvana, mm-hmm. Union, marriage, yoke. Yoga means yoke, like a connecting. I talked about, I've had my garden spade. It's a Fiskars. I've had it for over 20 years. We got it in St. Petersburg, Florida. Mm-hmm. It's one piece of steel. It feels like an extension. It feels like I'm connected to that shovel when I have it in my hand. When I push it in the ground, if I hit a rock, I can tell what size rock it is, or if it's wood or an old battery or some, or an old t-shirt or some other trash that's in there that doesn't, I'm sorry, that's the world we live in today. And we have a vision for a better world, but finding Atman, Vedanta philosophy, it's union or yoke or connection. Bruce McDonald was just speaking of that this morning. I caught a little bit of his show. That's why I wanted to say he's a fellow host. Mm-hmm. And we have some wonderful new hosts coming up too.
Bit.
If you think that
we're on board, we have some wonderful new hosts, including some clan mothers that we needed to have balance. We needed to regain balance in our lives, you know?
Yes.
While pursuing, you decide for yourself. Ethichasi tatha kuru. As you desire thereafter, it is your wish.
You got to want it. Seek and ye shall find. Knock and the door shall be opened.
Your will, not because I said it that you must live. It must be your own conviction. Then only you will get yourself involved in it by yourself totally. It is a subjective search. Your total involvement is necessary. It cannot be thrust upon you from outside. Yadhechasi tatha kuru.
Thank you. at Landmark Real Estate.
This good earth, dark circle that learned you. Remember, Revolution Radio is 100% listener supported. We try to support Revolution Radio. We want you to support it too. We think that you want to. So we say thank you for supporting Revolution Radio at revolution.radio. Please go to the website. There's three ways to give: snail mail address, place for monthly Patreon, promotion from your checking account, credit card address, debit card, whatever. Live showers with a lot of extra Revolution Radio. I think the radio is coming.
Listen to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. We'll be right back after this message.
Anarcho-syndicalist commune. We take it in turns to act as a sort of executive officer for the week.
Yes.
But all the decisions of that officer have to be ratified at a special bi-weekly meeting.
Yes, I see.
By a simple majority in the case of purely internal affairs.
Be quiet.
But by a two-thirds majority in the case of more...
Be quiet. I order you to be quiet.
Look, you stupid bastard. You've got no arms left.
Yes, I have.
Look.
It's just a flesh wound.
I don't believe I've seen such a display of courage, skill, nerve, grace, and stupidity.
I'll do you for that. Oh, what? Come here. What are you going to do, bleed on me? I'm invincible.
You're a loony.
The Black Knight always triumphs.
Roundtable Live Monday through Friday, 1 a.m. till 4 a.m. Eastern Time. Bring your mind, bring your ideas, bring your voice. King Arthur had nothing on us. Here, Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com.
Many years from now, would you be willing to trade all the days from this day to that for one chance, just one chance, to come back here and tell our enemies that they may take our lives, but they'll never take our freedom?
The future is uncertain. I know this. Death is inevitable. I know this. But one thing is certain. As free men, it is our right to live unencumbered and in peace. And those times are quickly drawing to an end. And in these times, peace is certainly an illusion. And as the chains grow tighter, our ability to slip those chains increase incrementally with every passing moment. Inaction is no longer an option. It's time to raise our voices like a cacophony of thunder and lightning, and tell the masters no more. And this is Nighthawk, and I say, for myself, no more. Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, because the freedom is slipping away.
We did not engage in conflict that was out of line with our mission.
Is it disloyal? Is it sedition? Is it treason to oppose the hands of tyranny? Never!
I will never send troops anywhere on a mission of that kind without telling them that if somebody shoots at them, they can darn well shoot back.
I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty! Oh, give me!
A dark cloud is finally lifting across the world as U.S. military intelligence and their global partners are destroying the deep state criminal power structure that has ruled over our planet for hundreds of years.
We are free with the God-given right, and we shall not yield that right to any power on earth.
Hi, I'm Scott McKay. The World Is At, and I am your host on The Tipping Point. On Revolution Radio, where every Monday from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern, we bring you the latest in this ensuing takedown of this global criminal empire.
That's an image of strength.
You'll get the raw hard truth here on The Tipping Point. So come join us Mondays, 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern, in Studio B at revolution.radio.
Thanks for listening while we took that short break here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. And yeah, we're going to get back to your host.
Okay, let me see what we have here. Welcome home. Glad you could make it. This good earth. Garden circles. Let's learn growing food and gardening together. We are all a part of this good earth garden circles. Well, yes. Glad you could join us. So, this good earth, garden circles, yes.
Everyone needs no introduction.
Imagine the teacher. Swami Chinmayananda was saying, Captain Sire, Captain One, you've got to seek God. And seek joy. The first concert we ever went to, Drudge, we grew up in Chicago, right? And the first, what was the first concert we ever went to?
Find Faith.
Yeah. Did you ever get any of that four-way window bank? I got one in that Oslo outfit. Those heavy duty stuff.
Girls out of this blue. Sing a song, play guitar, think it's not me.
Single digging. This aims to loosen the soil structure in order to expand root growth, air, gas, and nutrient exchanges to deeper depths. Double digging is ideally done during the spring or autumn. To begin double digging, you will need a digging fork, a border spade, a hand fork, a rake, a few 20-liter buckets, a wooden board, a wheelbarrow, and an irrigation system. Start by stringing off the area where you're going to double dig. This will optimize your work and keep your bed straight. Weed if needed. Let the moisture level bed. Wear wooden board to avoid any soil compaction. Now place the buckets at the beginning of the bed. Step 1. Take the soil out of the first trench and dump it into the buckets. Scrape the soil from the bottom of the trench like this. We now have a trench of 30 centimeters deep, which is about the size of a quarter stage bed. The soil in this bucket can be used to determine the process for the last trench. Step 2. Now use the single digging technique at the bottom of the trench. Insert fork 20 centimeters away from the bed's edge and dig throughout the entire trench. Once you arrive at the end of the trench, turn the fork like this to facilitate the last movement. Step 3. Move the wooden board back 30 centimeters. Until you reach the end of the bed. Step 4. Rake the bed every 5 trenches. This step will reduce the amount of soil you'll have to move at the end of the process. You can make the bed flat or raised. Once you arrive at the end of the bed, you only need to fill the last trench. At this point, you have 2 options. The first is to fill the trench with topsoil using the rake like this. Double digging brings air into the soil, which increases its volume. This is why raking the topsoil is often enough to fill the last trench. If this is not enough, you can dump the soil in the buckets from the first trench. Now, level the bed to give it its final form. The remaining soil can be used for compost or flat soil.
Welcome. Let's learn together. It's good work. Heart in circles. We're all a part of this community. Heart in circles. Well, let's see what our friend Lynn and I were involved with the Green Party when our friend David Cobb. We were high up. We were on national committees, weren't we?
Yes.
In Florida, in Mississippi.
Yes.
We were on state, Florida State Green Party, made all the meetings down Key West and other places, Ocala,
yeah.
Gainesville, and West Palm Beach. Made all the meetings, and we went to the National Convention, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, when yes. Our friend David Cobb was running for president. And then 2008, we were delegates to the presidential convention in Chicago, yeah, where Cynthia McKinney was our candidate.
Right.
Yeah. So we were involved during the with the Green Party, and we kind of backed off from it when Jill Stein got involved in it. And I think there's even a split in the Green Party, perhaps. We haven't really been following it that much. But this is our friend David Cobb. And we met him in Austin, Texas. First time, 1999, Nacogdoches, Texas, where I was, where we had our first home.
Yeah.
And we met David Cobb at the university there, University of Texas, Stephen F. Austin State University. Small world, he's here in Humboldt now. How did that happen? We met him in Milwaukee, St. Petersburg, Austin, Nacogdoches, and now David. And we'll have him as a guest on one of our upcoming shows. This is called Cooperation Humboldt. Well, we don't want to be ruled by aristocrats and the wealthy, and we would rather have a communal society. You know, people want to cooperate, and the aristocrats and the evildoers, they use it against us.
Yes.
They have people wearing masks. You know, they have one group cooperating, the mask wearers and the non-mask wearers, they're grouped, you know. But cooperation, you know, we couldn't have survived as human beings all these thousands of years without cooperation. So this is David Cobb, our friend David Cobb. We have a saying, what would Jesus do? I mean, that saying is, what would Jesus do? But WWHD, what would Humboldt do?
Yeah.
How are we going to survive the crises of corrupt government and being lorded over by the wealthy and aristocrats when we say in Vedanta philosophy or jhana yoga, we say namaste. That means I respect the God within you and you and me, there's an equality. The rich don't think that, you know, they don't care, as in Boys for Sale, they'll rape children and then kill them. You know, and the Jeffrey Epstein, Ghislaine Maxwell, her trial is next July. We're going to be watching and waiting and seeing what happens. She's in custody. They haven't suicided her yet, like Jeffrey Epstein. So we're going to see what comes out of it. We're wondering, and maybe they'll put a damper or an end to this hurting children.
Yes.
And in very high levels of government, business, and society, in the upper levels, and Jean Benet Ramsey, Bill Gates, five trips, and the video we played mentioned 28 trips or 27 trips by the Clintons. Why did they call the first class homeroom, you know, instead of, you know, with the kids? Anyway, that was a little sick humor for sick people. But this is our friend David Cobb.
I feel I have to stop and make a slight correction. You see, I don't think of myself, nor am I a liberal politician. I need to come clean. I'm a straight up revolutionary, y'all. I don't make any bones about it. Now, don't get alarmed. I'm a nonviolent revolutionary, but I am, in fact, a revolutionary. You see, I'm a revolutionary because I believe we must restructure this society. I don't believe that we can get to the world that I want to live in, one that's based on peace and justice and democracy and ecology, sustainability. We can't get to that world by tinkering at the margins of a fundamentally racist, sexist, class-oppressive society. And if that's not bad enough, the huge transnational corporations are literally going to destroy the planet that we depend upon for life itself if we don't interrupt it. How am I doing so far? Just wanted to make sure I was in the right place. I always like to say that I'm a revolutionary for two very important reasons. Number one, because it's true, right? And I think that we are living in a historic moment today where the ecological, political, and social crisis are really multiple crises are coming together so fast that we are literally experiencing the beginning stages of collapse. We are in a full-blown crisis. But don't get too alarmed about that either, because I want to remind you that in the Chinese language, where they use symbols for words, the symbol for crisis is also the symbol for another word. Anybody know it? Opportunity. That's right. We are literally living in a moment of opportunity where we could literally imagine restructuring society so that everybody has enough, right? We could literally do that. So I say I'm a revolutionary because it's true and because I think that we need radical honesty to talk about the reality that we're facing. And the second thing, the second reason I say I'm a revolutionary is because I'm looking for others. Huh? I'm looking for others. We need to find each other. And if, like me, you believe we need to restructure our society, but you haven't yet given yourself permission to admit that you're a revolutionary, here's your chance. The reality is that if you have been with me so far on this conversation, you too are a revolutionary, and embrace it. Right? Revolutionaries are the people who are able to imagine and envision a completely different world. So I do believe that I am a revolutionary. I know I'm a revolutionary. I want to restructure this society because I want to be clear. This society is, in fact, based on a narrative that I don't like. It is fundamentally about white supremacy, imperialism, patriarchy, and empire. See, that's the meta-context of reality. It's the narrative that is told over and over again because, you know what, we don't actually understand the world through facts. We understand the world through the stories that we tell each other. And stories that are told over and over again become the narrative, the cultural paradigm, the frame of reality. Well, I'm here to tell you that the narrative that human beings are fundamentally selfish, that we are exploitive, that we are oppressive, that we have to dominate and exercise power over, I don't think that's true. And you know what? Biologists tell us it's not true as well. They tell us that we would not even evolve as a species if we had not actually collaborated with one another, if we had not been willing to cooperate together. In fact, that is our birthright. And if you haven't yet read The Chalice and the Blade by Rhian Eisler, there's a freebie for you. It's a fantastic book that actually changed the way I sort of thought about things. So I know that we don't have to be power over, dominator, selfish, exploitive, oppressive. But that's how our society operates. And you know why? Because our systems incentivize them. You see, I think it's worth actually saying out loud, I don't believe that human beings are angelic nor demonic, right? I think that most of us will basically replicate the society that we're living in, and most of us will tend to do the things that our social systems and structures incentivize. And you know what's really, really wrong is that our society is incentivizing exploitation, oppression, commodification, right? Instead of love, compassion, kindness, and generosity. And don't you think that we ought to talk about love more often in politics? I mean, that's what we say that we want. Isn't that what we teach our children? It's what my mama taught me. And I want to share with you probably one of my favorite stories. Those of you who know me know I'm not embarrassed about it. I'm a mama's boy. I really am. I love my mama. I am who I am in large part because of her. And I will never forget an early memory. I was maybe 4 or 5 years old, and I was arguing over a toy with my brother and my cousin. It was a little toy car, right? And I remember, so we're yelling, and if any of you have ever had little boys, you can imagine the yelling and the screaming and the anguish over that little toy. And I remember that Mama came in, because we're little kids on the floor, and you know what I remember? I remember she got down with us. She got down on the floor with us, and she put her hands on us. And first, she just calmed us down, right? And she gave us love. She let us know everything was going to be all right. And then she very calmly just said, hey, look, what's going on? Oh, a toy. I know y'all like this toy. But, you know, we've learned to count, remember? So let's do it together. There's one, there's two, there's three. And the toy, there's only one toy. Oh, no. Well, you could share it one at a time. But then she looked around and said, oh, my goodness, but look. Look at all these toys I've seen you play with before. And she just brought them into the circle one by one. And there were so many toys by the time she was through. And she said, you see, kids, all you have to do is share. All you have to do is share. And you know what? As a four-year-old boy, that made sense to me. It made sense to me then, and it makes sense to me now. All we have to do is share, and we can literally create a new world. Well, I am here standing before you to tell you that I am beginning to work with others in this community and across this country and even the globe to begin to transition our society and our very economics into a solidarity economics model. We aim to prove that we can get all of our needs met, live a rich, fulfilling life without exploiting or oppressing anyone, without allowing anybody to exploit or oppress us, and to be able to do it in an ecologically sustainable manner. That, folks, is Cooperation Humboldt. I want to invite you to the website cooperationhumboldt.org or cooperationhumboldt.com. Either one will get you to us. And what you'll see is our vision of how to actually do that. What we've done is begun to identify and inventory different sectors of society: food, housing, shelter, art and culture, finance, childcare, the different sectors of society, and to say what is already happening in the manner of a solidarity economy that's not exploitive or oppressive or destructive, that's already happening now. Because anything that's already happening, we want to amplify it. We want to lift it up. We wouldn't want to compete with it. Why would we? That's great, because there's so much of that already beginning to happen right now. And we don't want to compete with that. We want to say thumbs up and let other people know that it's happening. But we also know already from this process that there are many gaps. There are, like, for example, I'll just take food, right? We know that in the food production and distribution system, we have fantastic community-supported agriculture. There's a community land trust. There's a number of things that are real. We've got a food co-op here. There's all these wonderful things. But you know what we don't have? A food forest. I want you to imagine for a moment that all of the public spaces in Humboldt County are fruit trees and nuts. And that kale, instead of ornamental shrubbery, is being grown. Imagine a food wall in Arcata or Eureka or Fortuna or any of the places where, and by the way, the food wouldn't be charged. It would simply be free. What I'm telling you is this. We can do that. That is possible. And I want to conclude by giving you the metaphor of the butterfly, because we know that the butterfly begins actually as a caterpillar. How does that happen? Scientists tell us that actually within the DNA of the caterpillar is actually a new recipe, new ideas. They're called imaginal cells. And literally within the caterpillar is an imagination, a new blueprint for what that organism will be. And in fact, it sows the death of the caterpillar. And it spins the cocoon, it goes in the chrysalis stage, and then those imaginal cells begin to move around, and they look for each other. They find each other. They say, I'm actually a butterfly. Are you? Oh, you're a butterfly too. And they begin to coagulate. They begin to cohere together. And then it's amazing, because then they say, we're butterflies, but I'm a wing. Oh, you're a thorax. I think the thoraxes are down there. Oh, you're a leg. They're way over here. Oh, a wing too. I'm a wing too.
We're all a part of this good earth garden circles, and try to find a niche. Like, I would say in the Blues Brothers, the janitor that told Jake and Elwood at the orphanage, he said, you boys need to go to church. And that's what he directed them in the right direction, you know? Yeah. So I think he had like the most important part in that whole movie. the Blues Brother, yep. The janitor,
yep.
Who was friends with Jake and Elwood.
And they literally begin to recreate that argument. The amount of calls, new.
Thanks for joining us. This Good Earth Garden Circles on Revolution Radio.
Listening to Revolution Radio.